to 91.9 FM KPTZ, Pleasures and Treasures, or Treasures and Pleasures, the interchangeably monikered show. And today I have with us Robert Ambrose, Executive Director of KPTZ.
Well, thank you. It's always, always a great pleasure talking with you.
Robert, most of the chatting you've done on KPTZ has been about KPTZ, and you have such a rich background, a varied background, places you've lived, places you've studied, things you've done. I just think that the listeners want to know more about who's at the helm here at KPTZ, who is Robert Ambrose, and what's he been up to. So why don't you start?
Questions I think about all the time. Who am I?
Well, you have a rich interior life, so I mean, it guides you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That I have picked up. Let the listener know from whence you hail and give us a little bit your trajectory from birth to getting to Port Townsend.
From birth. Wow. I was born in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Grew up mostly in Connecticut because my father worked in New York City. I went back to Ann Arbor for college. I was very into natural history my whole life and ended up going to graduate school in botany and genetics. That was in North Carolina. And then as I was doing my research, I got involved with a group that was, well, first of all, I'd say that I had the opportunity in graduate school to go to a tropical ecology field course in Costa Rica for 2 months. And that opened my eyes to a different everything, different culture, different ecology. And I got involved with a group of scientists in the U.S., graduate students and professors who were organizing their science to try and direct their research that would have practical outcomes for people. So it is called the New World Agriculture Group. This was in the early 80s, and we established a technical assistance program with the government in Nicaragua at the time, the Sandinista government, because when the Sandinistas came to power in Nicaragua by overthrowing Somoza, the dictatorship, almost all of the trained personnel in Nicaragua left. So there was no, the Ministry of Agriculture was pretty much decimated. And all of us ecologists of one kind or another went down and began to work with the agricultural research system there. Living in Nicaragua, really, I consider my real education in terms of I learned so much about the world and about people.
And you're proficient in Spanish.
And I became proficient in Spanish, yes.
Está bien.
Está muy bien.
So, give an example of some applied research in this field.
What we were interested in doing was to look at systems of agriculture, traditional systems of agriculture in Central America, which are usually polycultures where they grow beans and corn, or they mix crops in a field. And that's largely replaced in all industrialized agriculture, which needs monocultures, big monocultures that you can mechanize and you can apply lots of chemicals to control pests and diseases. We knew that countries like Nicaragua did not have the resources to pay for inputs, pesticides or fertilizers even. So we wanted to help small farmers and farmer co-ops develop systems of planting that would minimize the use of inputs but increase yields. That's what our research was. We looked at the impact of growing different kinds of crops together, especially a cash crop that would earn revenue and a food crop. And then we did experiments to look at the impact on pests like insects or diseases that would attack. That's a long, involved explanation.
No, it's actually an enlightening one and not as lengthy as you think. Are you involved with the farming community here in Jefferson County at all?
Not at all, actually, no. After I spent time in Central America, I got very interested in other things. I got interested in development theory and development economics. And then after a time, I was done with academia. I just could not be there any longer. So I became a carpenter for a while.
And you are a head heart guy. Even when you were involved with academia, you were always interested in the application mm-hmm. for real people. Mm-hmm. And you got down and gritty. So, mm-hmm. But I could see that when you get down and gritty enough, you have less and less of a tolerance for the limitations of academia.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was a long time ago, but I think that experience really guides my life in many ways. I think I learned that there are forces, global forces, that it's very hard to individually have an impact on, but that if you work in your community, you can make a difference and you can have an impact. And that's pretty much guided my work since then.
What kind of carpentry did you do? Where did you do it? Where are you going to keep going on your trajectory?
Okay. I started out, I was just hired to work on a house that had been burnt down. So I did labor. And
where was this?
This was in the Bay Area, San Francisco. The house that burned was in Berkeley. And I fell in with a small company. Because of connections with a friend. And I became friends with the Finnish carpenter, and I ended up becoming a Finnish carpenter I think I worked as a carpenter for 3.5 years or so, 4 years maybe. And I've done carpentry on and off since, like, building my house in Alaska.
You built your own house.
Yeah, with help, but yes.
Okay, so you left the Bay Area after having a carpentry career, which ended as a finisher, and mm-hmm. then?
And then my first wife, Jess, and I, who met in Nicaragua, she was English, had our first son, who was 1 year old. He was about 1 year old when I was I finished carpentry, and I worked for a nonprofit for a couple of years in the Bay Area, too.
What nonprofit?
Called the Pesticide Action Network. It reconnected me to my science, really. It was a group that works for pesticide reform around the world.
Boy, we have to have a Monsanto conversation sometime.
Yes. I was pretty involved with Monsanto information back then. I was getting really frustrated with the traffic in the Bay Area, and also, we didn't want our son to grow up in a city. And a friend of mine who had been living in Alaska for a long time, a friend of ours, invited me up, and I had some time. So he took me up to Alaska, and this was in September of 1990. And he took me to do all the Alaskan things. We mountain biked in the wilderness and went on hikes, and we caught salmon with nets. And
you went to Denali Brewing. I'm reading his T-shirt, listener.
Denali Brewing wasn't alive even then. I had this distinct impression after being there for 2 weeks, I think, that Alaska was a place where humans didn't always win. And I was wrong, as I discovered, living there for 23 years. But it was a powerful feeling. And so when I got back to San Francisco, we sort of discussed it. We didn't really discuss it. I ordered my wife a fleece coat, and it arrived in the mail, and she said, she was a character, she just said, "What the hell is this for?" Because she was working in a clinica full of Central Americans and Mexicans, and she thought we were going to be going south again. But we ended up going to Alaska, and then we had another kid. And when you have kids, you have roots, and ended up in the community Talkeetna and worked there.
And you did many different things in Alaska, but one of them was you began your interest in radio, right?
That's true. I began being interested in African music earlier when I was in graduate school. And actually, between Nicaragua and the Bay Area, I lived in London for a year, and that furthered my music interests. And then in Alaska, I started writing for a magazine out of LA called The Beat Magazine. I was the African music correspondent, I guess, for that. And that, so I started building up a big collection of music. And when I moved to Talkeetna, that radio station, KTNA, was just coming on the air in 1993. And so, like many of us here, having a community radio station means that you can learn how to become music, or a DJ, or a show
talk show host.
Yeah, or a talk show host. So I began my show in 1993.
What was your initial interest in African music rooted in? How did you come by that?
I've always been interested in music, and through the 70s, I was very interested in Celtic music and old-time music. And then I started listening to some reggae towards the end of the 70s. I think the African connection, I had heard some African that I liked, but there wasn't much distributed at that time. But while I was in Nicaragua, a friend sent me a cassette tape. This one performer, Pierre Akandenge from Gabon. I listened to it a lot. I listened to it a lot because I had to write it. My final report when I was leaving Nicaragua was involved. It was in Spanish. It was over 100 pages long, and I had to focus, and I could do that with that music. And at the same time, it kind of hooked me. So I got interested there. And then as I went to England, and I lived in Brixton, and there was African music and Caribbean music shops right on the road. So I just got more involved.
Have you spent time in Africa?
Just brief times. I was able to travel for a couple of months in Africa. We went with our son when he was a year and a half old for 2 months in Botswana and Zimbabwe. And then later, when our kids were older, we had this wonderful experience of going on the Semester at Sea ship to go around the world, the floating university, basically. That went to 10 ports, and two of them were in Africa. So we were able to explore South Africa and Kenya a bit.
Do you still travel widely?
Not so much. Not since coming to Port Townsend. I have traveled previous years. I've traveled quite a bit in Mexico. I mean, there were things, there were catalysts for different times of travel. One was before you have kids and it's easier, although we did make a point of traveling as much as we could with our kids so that they would be exposed.
Are your kids adults now?
They are. They're 23 and 27.
And what are they up to?
My older son, Nico, has just finished his first year as a public defender in an attorney in Fairbanks, Alaska. And my younger son is just finishing this month his year and a half of coursework in med school, University of Washington Med School. Although they have an exchange program with Alaska, so he's doing that in Anchorage.
Well, Alaska is sort of deep in your soul. What was the transition like leaving Alaska?
I do. I feel Alaskan. You know, I think I will probably always feel that because it is a different place. Living there is different. What happened to me is that my partner, Jess, died in a car accident in 2007 during work. And we'd been together 24 years and we had been in this community for a long time together. So Talkeen is a very small community. And when you're there, when you build your life there, you're part of the tapestry of the community. And the tapestry was Robert and Jess and the boys. So happily in a new relationship, and partly because of that relationship, I felt we need to extract from that community. Have a fresh start.
And what made you choose Port Townsend?
I put a lot of research into it. You could ask my wife, Linda, but it was apparent probably ever since Jess died that I just felt like I had to leave. That was my first major, I guess that was my major impulse after she died. I felt like I had to leave, but I couldn't, because I had kids and I had a job that was really important. I was manager of the radio station at that time and had big projects in play. So those were lifelines that really kept me going and centered me. Otherwise, I don't know where I'd be right now. But when it came time to move, I did a lot of research. I tried places on when I would go places to see if they felt right. And then I did deliberate research looking at this region here to try and find some place that was halfway between Alaska and the rest of the country, because most of the country I don't think I could live in now. And I discovered Port Townsend. Had a checklist and it checked so many boxes. And I came here and it felt like home the first time I came. And we looked at houses, and then Linda came down and we went downtown and went out on one of the docks, and it felt like home for her too. So only the second time she's had that feeling. The first time was when she moved to Talkeetna, which was a long time, you know, a long time ago.
We've been fortunate, both of us, that we've been in places where we feel a sense of place. Mm-hmm. And you certainly have become part of the tapestry of this community through the radio station. Mm-hmm. And what else are your current interests and activities besides all things KPTZ?
KPTZ has been my major focus for the last couple of years. But other than that, I'm very into bicycling. I have been very interested in or very actively birding. Birding is what I turned to and focused on to help cope with the loss of Jess. And I did birding in all different places. So I still do that. I do the kind of birding I do is I call it green birding because I won't drive 100 miles to go see an unusual bird. I might ride my bike if I can make it, not 100 miles, but I will. I keep track of the birds I see when I'm either on my bike or walking or on a boat.
There's a lot of birdies. I call them birdies in this community. Are you connected with any of them?
Not so much yet. You know, when you uproot from a community and you move into a new community, it takes a tremendous amount of work to settle in. And our house needed quite a bit of work, still does.
Luckily, you have a carpenter in the house.
Luckily, that's helped, and we found another young, wonderful carpenter to help too. Sailing is the other thing I do quite a bit, and I've gotten hooked into the Thunderbird racing fleet here.
Did you sail before you came to Port Townsend?
I hadn't sailed in a long time, but that's basically all I did when I grew up. I was a competitive sailor, dinghies and larger boats all the way up through college.
This is going to sound like a silly question. I love prefacing a silly question by saying that's what it is. You are so thorough in all your various interests, and they're not necessarily, you know, on the same paths. You have a kind of a wide range. What's that like for you, sort of juggling all these things? I guess you do them sequentially, not all at once, but you're so focused when you get started on something that it's what made me really admire you and be grateful that our station has you at the helm. And so you put that into anything you're doing. So what about the things that you then leave behind?
That's a really good question, because I thought about that with birding, because I was doing birding intensively for years, and that has been set aside to a degree. I did do a fair amount of birding when I first got here, and I think I recognized, because I knew about a year ago that I was going to commit to put a substantial amount of time into KPTZ for a while, not forever, but...
Don't even hint at that.
For a while, and I feel like I'm not keeping up with the birding like I would like to, but you can't do everything all at the same time. I have worked bicycling in pretty well with... That I keep doing that and exploring new bike horizons, I guess.
Well, and you have a vast repository of memories to draw from the things that you've really pushed the envelope on and gotten to know a lot about. And you have those experiences to just to kind of keep you warm while you're on a different focus.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but I get, I think I try to feel or get rewards from the work I do wherever that is. And I feel like that here at KPTC.
I was joking when I said you can't leave here. Maybe I didn't say it out loud to you, but we're just getting started with you here at the station. But seriously, what haven't you done that you, not with radio, but in other areas that you have thoughts about possibly pursuing?
I don't think I have any other goals that are right on my horizon right now. I would like to have more time to develop some more wilderness biking experiences. It's called bike packing, where you carry your gear and go off into the wilderness by bike.
Do you go by yourself or with a group?
It'd be good to go with at least another person. I haven't found someone interested in that yet here, but there are lots of people around that do that. So once there might be time to do that, and that would involve some travel. You know, I'm just excited to continue developing life here in Port Townsend and on the Olympic Peninsula. There's so much to do that I don't really regret that I'm not traveling more this time. There are some things with the radio that still need to get done, and there'll be more information about that pretty soon. We'll see. We'll see what comes up.
I like the idea that you just introduced me to, others may know it, of green birding. Green anything is becoming far more necessary and interesting to many of us. Mm-hmm. So we're getting ready to wrap up. Is there something I haven't asked you about yourself that you feel it would be great for the listener to know?
Not necessarily. I do feel like we live in very interesting times, very challenging time right now. A lot of unknowns with climate change and with the direction of government in this country and the world, really. I believe it's important for communities like Port Townsend, like in other communities, to consciously work on developing a really strong community that's resilient and can face the challenges that come in the future, that will come in the future. And I just look forward to participating in that and doing what I can, because I guess I like to make a difference when I live in a community.
And I think radio is a central part of that, because we really try to have this station support community efforts and enhance them. So since you didn't fill your last 5 minutes with much more about you, we're going to take this opportunity to give us a preview of coming attractions. You said more about that another time, probably not a lot of detail, but give us a little antipasto for when the full-blown changes come. What kinds of things are you thinking of?
Well, one goal that we've set, the board has set, is to begin a daily news program that will keep our community more informed about what's going on around here. That takes a lot of work, and the problem is that we don't have very much money, so we can't just hire a reporter and get it going. We have money for our part-time reporter, and that's a challenge. Instituting a local news program is one goal that we're moving towards.
Well, and in support of the many goals here, this we could use your last few moments as an opportunity to say, come volunteer. We need your energy. We need your input, especially young people. A wonderful chance to learn things and a wonderful chance to teach us old farts a few things. It's a neat exchange. There's so much more we could do if we had so many more of you helping us do it. So, Robert, give us your final thoughts, and then we will let you get ready for your show.
That's true. My show comes up in a few minutes. My final thoughts are, I'm just happy to be invited onto your show. It's always a pleasure talking with you. I think your show is one of several where talking between people brings insights into you life. And I appreciate you and you're doing this show, and I look forward to many years of it in the future.
Well, back at you, kiddo. We really appreciate you. Alaska's loss is Port Townsend's gain, and you certainly have weathered the biggest tragedy in your life, and you are building a new life that's wonderful to see you doing. Thank you so much for being with us, Robert Ambrose. You're listening to Treasures and Pleasures, Pleasures and Treasures, the interchangeably monikered show. This is Marcia Pearlstein, your friendly neighborhood interviewer. I'd like to thank Mike Schlexer, production coordinator, engineer, editor par excellence, Larry Stein, program director, and Robert Ambrose, the executive director of KPTZ. Go gently. If you can't go gently, go as gently as you can.
Thank you, Marcia.